What is up? It is Tuesday, February 12th. That means you have 2 days left to get your Valentine's arrangements taken care of. So don't forget about that shit. It's important if you have a significant other. Tonight's episode 61 of Inside the Game. Hello, I'm DJ Wheat. Joined by EG DeMuslim, EG Idra, and EG In Control. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good.
Are you ready for Valentine's Day?
You know what? Greg, well, I'll just say this. I went full Notebook on this Valentine's Day, and I'm pretty happy about it.
You went full Notebook?
I went full Notebook, man. Like, Anna's not here, so I'm going to spoil one part of it. I rented a pottery painting hour at a store.
Oh, wow. Shit.
We're going to go paint a motherfucking bowl or some shit.
Are you going to be interlocking fingers? Is your
I think in the store they frown upon that. But
what was it like? Hot Shots Part Two, where they like did the mockery of the scene and the clay just started flying everywhere. That's how I imagine your session would go a little bit.
Yeah,
maybe not. I don't know. That's fucking epic, dude. My wife will be jelly.
Just one part of it, man. It's actually insane.
That's one of 28 parts, DJ Wheat, that I've put together to go full Notebook for Valentine's Day.
It was full Notebook. But she agreed to go see Die Hard at night, so I got the right girl.
Win.
I can't believe you're going to do that for an hour. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around that.
I can't either, Greg, but it was so goddamn. When I walked by the place, I was like, oh, God, she'd love that. Oh, my God.
And then you knew that it just had to be.
Yeah.
How are you guys? Any big Notebook plans for you guys, or is it just StarCraft?
I'm just spending... In fact, me and Sean, one of the housemates here, have planned to watch Blue Valentine, which is apparently one of the most depressing, like, movies ever. So,
what is Blue Valentine? Like, can you give us a synopsis? Have you seen this before? Is this a
No, I've never
tradition?
Seen it. Okay. Sean's seen it a few times whenever he has, like, a Valentine's Day alone. And he told me it's, like, really sad. It's basically, like, the start of a break... Or start of a relationship to the end of a, like, relationship, a breakup kind of thing. And thought it was quite fitting for Valentine's Day, but
do you feel like when you watch it together that, you know, it might be a better experience if you were like snuggling?
Yes.
Okay.
Sean, by the way, for those of you that are watching, is the guy that does all the camera work and a lot of the creative work for our videos.
Yeah, cool dude.
Sean is the most popular name in all of esports, so you have to clarify who you're talking about.
Yeah,
it overtook Dan for that one.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
What about you, Greg? How are things?
I actually went out and visited my girlfriend the last week, so we did our Valentine's Day then. So I'll probably just get drunk and commiserate with Ben and Sean.
Yeah, are you gonna watch Blue Valentine too?
We'll
or are you just gonna laugh at them?
Yeah, that might be.
Promise to take a picture and tweet that, just so I can at least feel better about myself. And so you can document that these guys, it gets better. Anyway, Valentine's Day is Thursday, so we've got other pressing things to discuss, that being, StarCraft 2. And I just want to thank everyone. Apparently, we've started getting emails again. Appreciate that. You can send them in to itg@onemoregame.tv. But some of you sent it to a shell for a while. And I will be checking those fairly regularly. And we got some good ones to come in. So let's just talk, though, about some of the topics this week that have come to that have definitely come to the surface. And that being Hellbats. Let's talk Hellbats. There's been a lot of discussion this week. There's been tweets. There's been forum posts by David Kim. There's certainly been a lot of, I guess, back and forth about this. But obviously, David Kim, let's start with what David Kim says. So the Hellbat, everyone knows, the unit in Heart of the Swarm. David Kim basically says, top-level players haven't figured out how to stop them or deal with them yet. Other players say, hey, David, you're full of shit. So I want to hear about your experiences with them as of late and then your take on whether it needs a change, and who wants to start?
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of the what was the mech unit right at the start?
Warhound.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of the Warhound, except it's like cheaper and slightly weaker. It's like very inexpensive. It's just 100 minerals, no gas. You have to get the armory to get the Hellbat, but after that, and then it's just it's very strong. It does a lot of DPS. It has its bio, so it can be healed by medivacs, which means that them as drops are even better than them just normally. It's just like it's really good in every way. There's no downside to making it. It's stupidly good.
Yeah, I think the kind of disconcerting part about the Hellbat is that there's certain aspects of it that in isolation cause problems, but it's that there's so many aspects together that it becomes a bigger problem. For instance, I think fitting four of them in a medevac, but then also allowing the medevac to heal them, I think those are two separate problems, and David Kim addressed that and said we were considering having them, like, only two would fit in a medevac. I don't know that that would necessarily fix the issue. I think part of the problem is they move pretty fast, their damage output's really good, and that they tank really well. Like, I feel unnaturally too well. Like, when I see, you know that weird moment when you, like, leave three stalkers to do battle with two battle hellions, and you, like, look away expecting to come back and find them dead, but then this battle hellions are still there and your stalkers are gone, and you're like, what the fuck just happened over there? And that still goes on right now. It's still kind of breaking my brain. Or Hellbat, sorry. I keep calling him Battle Hellion.
Yeah, for me, TVT has been one of the most frustrating matchups ever. I tried to avoid the Hellbat as much as possible for quite a while, just to see how I could do without it. And I was getting Hellbat drop pretty much every game, and every game that a guy did a Hellbat drop would practically win. And I spoke with Greg, too, and he watched some MLG games, and the Terran that Hellbat dropped would win every time, like, despite being evenly skilled or whatever. And early on in StarCraft 2, there was Blue Flame Hellions that did like 24 damage in a line, and they nerfed Blue Flame Hellion damage because it did too much damage. But now you've got these Hellbats that have 50% more health, they have a better cone, literally every hit's like a Baneling exploding. And if you think about that, that's crazy. Banelings cost 50 to 25, and they blow up, and that's it, they're done. Battle Hellions have 135 health. They can get healed, they run around, they can shoot a Baneling pretty much every shot and just eliminate mineral lines. Even in battle situations when you're going mech, like tanks and Hellbats, they don't seem to die. People haven't even sprinkled in medevacs in that composition yet just to heal them on their front line, but there's no way that army will die in TVT. They're just too good. And the problem isn't necessarily with how many you can fit in a medevac, it's just that they do too much damage. That's the problem.
And that's been sort of the talk about it. Well, if we're going to do something about it, we'd really consider the cargo change. Is that enough?
No.
I'm hearing guys say no, basically.
I feel like it's the unit itself. Like, we can talk about the medevacs, and hopefully we will in a minute, because I think the speed boost needs to be altered as well. But just the raw utility of them, they're not necessarily just harvester threats. They are really good at frontline absorbing of damage, but then also dealing of damage. And that's like, I feel like if you're going to put a unit like that out there, there should be some justification for cost. Like, either it takes gas. Three supply sounds ridiculous, so that can't be the fix. I feel like it has to be in the stats itself. But I just, the idea of sticking 10, 15 battle, or Hellbats, excuse me, in the front line of a mech army is like, you'd never not do that. They're fantastic. You know what I mean?
Well, like, nobody ever complained about their damage being too little either. When you can upgrade Blue Flame Hellion and stuff, like, their purpose was, okay, they kill Lings and Zealots and whatever, and they just tank a lot. Whereas now, Blizzard were like, okay, we're going to make them deal more than double the damage of an ordinary Hellion. They're going to have more health, too. They're going to have a better cone. Just, I don't really know what they were thinking. And the fact that it's not like an upgrade that you can now kind of upgrade for Battle Hellion mode, it's just, okay, as soon as you've got this armory, you go. Like, 7-minute mark, you kill their whole mineral line or whatever. The way that Blizzard work, from what I've seen, is they like to make a unit really imbalanced, then limit it down, or slowly nerf it. So I think, hopefully, that's what they're doing. But the fact that they're working on the cargo space in a medevac rather than the actual unit itself, that kind of worries me.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue is the survivability. Fixing the fact that they're bio, like making them not bio, would then make the drops less good. But even in just heads up or straight up battles, they just don't die. And they're supposed to be like a light, like a little damage dealer. They're supposed to beat up zealots and zerglings and stuff. They're not supposed to be a tank. I don't know. It's just they're very, very powerful.
I'll start with you, Greg, just kicking off of that. How have you been dealing with it?
I don't know. Honestly, I feel like most of the games I win versus Terran are because they don't use Hellbats properly. I think that's the biggest thing, because it makes mech, even against Infestor Broodlord, this really funny thing happens. They're actually just so powerful that they eat through the Broodlings, and then the Ground Army pushes your Infestors back, and without the Infestor support, you lose the air battle. So even in that situation, they're super powerful. And they also make pre-Broodlord timings really, really strong, just because like, they're so much stronger than regular Hellions, even with Blue Flame. And then they're good for drops early on. They kind of like force you contain, like they contain you, because you have to have so much of your army to actually kill them off. If you try and throw units at them piecemeal, or any Zerglings at all, just four Hellbats under a medevac is not going to die.
So, when you have lost, do you feel like that's when a Terran has effectively used a Hellbat, is what you're saying?
Yeah, just they're good in every situation.
What about from a drop situation? Like, do you feel like you're having, like, versus, say, an 8 Marine medevac drop and a 4 Hellbat drop?
4 Hellbat drops, just infinitely better.
But, I mean, like, how are you trying to handle that situation differently?
Oh, I don't know. You have to have roaches. Like I said, Zerglings are just, don't touch them. You have to have roaches. Honestly, they're just always cost efficient. It feels like whenever anyone uses Hellbats, they're getting their money's worth out of them.
Do you feel like there is something that you haven't figured out about the game? Greg, do you think that maybe there's something you don't know that David Kim suggests?
If there is, I'm not seeing it.
Okay.
And it seems like no one else is.
I didn't mean to depress, man, but it's like.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, David Kim was actually referencing the Soul Key versus. Can't remember what Terran it was, but he went mass roaches and just Last. I want to say it's that. It was Soul Key versus Last, and it was for the MLG thing. And apparently, like, he had no anti-air, so the medevacs were just kind of flying around, torching him up. And David Kim cites that as his, like, and you can see in this example that top players don't quite know how to handle them just yet. He said, he, like, criticized him and said that all those roaches were on one hotkey moving around. Or one ball is the word to use. And it's kind of tough because, yeah, that's an example where Soulkeep got caught doing the wrong thing in response to medevac drops. And in that case, Marines and those medevacs would have done just as much damage. But there's countless examples across the many games being played on a day-to-day basis, both in new HOTS beta tournaments, but also just on stream, where... And this is, in my opinion, the most frustrating thing. You are in position. You have your Mama Corps. You have 5 Stalkers. The medevac speeds past all of it, drops off 4 Hellbats, in the mineral line. You tug your probes away, but in 2 splashes, 15 probes are already gone. And it's like, I feel like there's something wrong there. I feel like that amount of power wrapped up in 500 minerals, 100 gas is too much.
Another problem is that what he's saying just, like, doesn't make sense, because you can't really use spores to stop the speed boost of medevacs. They help. And especially if you're against, like, a Bioterran who just queues up drops to force multitasking out of you, then they'll sometimes run into a spore. But if you're just doing a single Hellbat drop, you're paying at least a little bit of attention to that. It's going to take a ridiculous number of spores to actually keep that out. It's not like you're going to make Hydras versus Terran. So shooting down the medevacs isn't a great option. And if you have to split up your army and leave it in every place, then applying pressure to them is going to be even more difficult than it already is against, like, tanks and planetaries and whatnot. And David Kim himself has come out and said that he thinks the mech army should be, like, the late-game max mech army should be the strongest in the game, and it's essentially unbeatable in straight-up fights. So if you're in a situation where you have to play on the back foot and play defensively against this one single, like, light, easy tactic, and then, like, how are you supposed to prevent them from getting that super army that he's trying to let them have? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Also, to add on that, like, I've actually played games where I've known Hellbat drops coming, and I've specifically, like, put bunkers in my mineral lines, and I mean in them, so it's actually distorting my, like, mineral flow, my mineral income. And there's, like, the 4-player map where you spawn, like, northeast, south, or west, like, on the edges, and then you, like, spawn with an expo in the back of your base. And I had a bunker in each base, and they tried to, like, Hellbat drop me on both expansions, and Hellbats still don't die, even with, like, bunkers and stuff in my mineral lines, and I was losing more than I was getting, despite him dropping into bunkers and stuff. So when he's talked about people don't really know how to deal with it yet. That might be true to some extent, but even when you do deal with it, they still just trade very efficiently, which it's absurd. And if anybody's watched my stream recently, like, you'll see it happening.
Yeah, that was kind of demonstrating the MLG match too, a tie versus innovation. Like one, like the last game of the series, I forget which side it was, but one side held back drop and the other just committed to defending and put up like a bunker and widow mines or whatever. And they held it off. They didn't take damage from it, but it just cost so much to do that that the 500 minerals invested in the Hellbat drop was less than the investment in defense, and the Hellbat player won anyway because they were just ahead from forcing that much defense out of his opponent. Like, you can deal with it, but you can't win the game if you deal with it.
And I know it's like it's easy to hear all three of us kind of bitch about this and just assume it's like a our issue or something like that, but I'd kind of challenge the people watching the show to find somebody that would defend the Hellbat, because I feel like it's a unit that upon release should have been worked on a little bit. Like, we're not like, it's not the Warhound where it's like, get the fuck out of the game, you don't make any sense at all. It's more like, I understand why this is here. Mech needs some kind of mobile protection against light units, but perhaps not something so badass.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this kind of segues into we've still got some other Heart of Swarm stuff that I want to actually. Well, let's just talk about this. So I was watching the Muslim stream yesterday. Saw him get Hellback drop. Saw him try some Hellback drop. But it was actually one comment when he was up against a Protoss and an Oracle was just kind of eating his SCVs alive, and he said, "This unit is the bane of my existence." And so we kind of come back to the Oracle after, you know, it has had several spell swaps with the Mothership Core. You know, it's gone through several changes itself in terms of how the energy is depleted and how it does damage. But I feel like the more that I've been watching, especially with, like, the MLG HOTS qualifying matches, some of the show matches we've been seeing, the spell switching from the Heart of Swarm Protoss, it kind of makes sense in the grand scheme of how the game seems to be playing out. The Muslim, first, I want to hear what you think about the Oracle, but in control, since you are the resident Protoss player, what are your thoughts just kind of on the spell switching, and do you think that it's settled down to a point that's like, okay, this makes sense?
Jeff first, or?
Yeah, Jeff.
I'll be interested to see where it goes with time. I call it time stop, but maybe it's called time warp. I don't know. I kind of name stuff myself. But with time stop on the Mama Core, I feel like that might be... I mean, maybe they really like it, and I start off liking it, but it's kind of created a lot of, like, just 3-gate Mama Core pressure in PvP. But then in PvZ, it's created a lot of, like, gateway timings. And then in PvT, it's been used as an early game aggression as well. I liked it on the Oracle, is I guess the big long-winded answer I'm trying to give here, where I felt like it was a spell that allowed that unit to have a little bit more utility, but they dropped that in the name of giving it like a mini Void Ray attack against light units, and it like two shots harvesters. So I'll be interested to hear what Ben says, because my defense for the unit is that I feel like with how weak it is, if your opponent's in place to defend against an Oracle, it does nothing. But if you're not in place or you're distracted and you don't see it, it can literally kill your entire mineral line in like 10 seconds. It takes no time at all, and it's just over.
Ben, why don't you comment, and then I've got a follow-up to what In Control said.
Okay. Yeah, so if you talk about like aggressive strats that Protoss can do, let's say I scout at the normal timing. I see two gases or the second gas going up, and I pretty much assume what he's going to do, which is like a one base aggression build. Within regards to what he can do with that build, he can do Blink Stalker all in with a Mama Core, blink into any part of your base. He can do an Immortal all in, like be a proxy robo or whatever you. He can do a Void Ray all in. He can do a 4-gate all in. There are a lot of all ins he can do, and to rub out all those all ins, he can also expand and just play a very gas intensive expand, which. So these options are pretty, like, wow. Like, he's got a lot of options. If you go Reaper and you get 4-gated, it's really problematic. And also, if you get Void Raid, it's problematic, or even Oracle. But the Oracle usually hits around like the 7-minute mark, depending on if you proxy it, then it can hit way earlier. But in this time, if I want to have a turret in either base, or let's say a turret in one base and Marines at the other, there's just a lot of stuff that can be hitting me at any point in time. within that regard. And if I invest, let's say, 300 minerals in turrets, including the engineering bay, or 250, what have you, that's a lot of money to invest. And if another all-in happens, then I'm pretty screwed. Like, one of the foolish GIFs I've seen recently was QXE getting Void Ray all-in, and he had three bunkers at the front with a missile turret, and he just lost. So lots of these strategies that Protoss are doing right now are really good. The Momocore with the Blink Stalker all-in, that means you can get vision without needing the Robo at all, or the Observer. But also with the Time Warp, it means that they actually outrange Marines a lot. So the Marines are constantly walking slow, trying to catch up to these Stalkers while they're in this glob. And it takes a while to move out of this glob, and they're just like picking you apart, basically. So I'm finding things tough, but I'm definitely getting better with the Oracle situation. Like, Terrans, or me, myself, personally, are finding that I can apply pressure and stuff, but it depends a lot on the map. Like, if there's a map where it's a single force field to block you out of your natural, then they're just dealing damage to you, and you're kind of taking it in the face. I just feel Blizzard's making things like, okay, you have to be there, or you're going to die, or you're going to lose a lot of workers kind of thing. And the Oracle, while a turret does the job for sure, it still does a lot of damage for what it is.
I guess kind of going back, you know, before we had the Time Warp on the Oracle, and then they made the change to Mothership Core, and you bring up the interesting points about how that kind of, like, drew the timings in a little bit. It made it happen a little bit quicker with the Mothership Core, or the potential of it, versus, like, having five Time Warps down at a time, which was just fucking ridiculous, right? As far as where it is, you know, even with the timing, do you still think that's better than where it was, Jeff?
I think so. I kind of like the utility of the Momocore, and I think if you do take Time Warp off the Momocore, I don't think you see it that much, or as much, rather. It still has, like, the recall ability, and the light damage it does is okay, but the time warp is really what kind of makes it a unit that you carry around. Obviously, for spotting for high ground is a big deal, too, Blink Stalkers and that kind of thing. I just think the Oracle's... I agree with everything Ben said. It's one of those units that's kind of a part of a philosophy that appears to be present in StarCraft II. Things like Burrow at Hatchery Tech, well, if you don't have detection, you're just kind of dead. You know, the Hellbat drops in the mineral line, if you didn't have everything in place there to stop that from happening, you're just kind of dead. But the same is true with the Oracle. If you have defenses in place, it does nothing. It can sprinkle some fairy dust on your units and reveal them for a while. Or it absolutely annihilates your entire mineral line. And that dichotomy is kind of sick. It's like you're either in position and it does nothing, or you're not and it kills everything. It doesn't feel like there's a middle ground there.
All right, well, this kind of, like, takes us into a question that came in involving both of these things that we've talked about for Heart of the Swarm. And I believe Bicker was his name, asked, do you think the early tournaments of HOTS will be exactly like the early tournaments of Wings? I mean, how there was a bunch of cheesy stuff like a ton of Reapers or Blue Flame stuff.
Not to the same extent.
Yeah, not quite the same, but there's definitely going to be, like, right now, well, not so much today, actually. It's changing really quickly. But yesterday, every Korean Terran you played CVT would go a Proxy Rex Reaper, then a couple of Widow Mines. They'd be aggressive with them if the Reapers did damage, otherwise defensive. Then into a Hellbat drop off one base, like while they were expanding, and just stuff like that. And that popped up in, like,
fucking funny shit to deal with. Right?
Terrible. And that popped up in like a day. No one had seen that before. Like, people didn't. I don't know. I guess Proxy Reaper just didn't click for some reason for people for a while. And stuff like that will keep popping up. Like, people are starting to apply Time Warp to all the standard 2-base Protoss all-ins, which is super, super powerful. That took a while. So people are slowly catching on to things. I don't know, we could see something cool out of early Burrow. One thing Ben mentioned that a lot of the Korean Terrans are doing, or Korean Zergs are doing, they rush Overlord speeds. This is now on Hashtag, and they use that to draw off Widow Mine shots when you're using that defensively, and they do a Roach Bane all-in under that, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, there's plenty of little stuff.
And you just got Greg in a nutshell.
What?
There's this Proxy Reaper thing was bullshit, but then there's a Speed Overlord.
I didn't say it was bullshit. I said it was really powerful.
Dude, Speed Overlord, that shit's cray, Jeff. That's 100-100 early, like, for what?
I think that's much more creative than fucking building a barracks next to my base and killing me.
I actually played Sasquatch yesterday, the complexity zerg who rose up from their academy. And I'll tell you, I've played like 300 games of Hoth so far. I've played quite a bit. But one of the funniest things ever was he was the first zerg to do it to me where, like, I got a speed overlord in my base at 6 minutes. And they're just like fluttering around checking for tech. And I was like, I had the Stargate queued up and I was like, do I just put it down anyways? I don't know what I do here. Like, it was a weird feeling because normally you stick it in a corner and then your stalkers chase off the overlords or something. But with this, they were just like, all right, where is it? What are you doing? What are you doing here?
Greg, where is that going in? Like, are you just taking that earlier gas and then going speed and then overlord speed?
I haven't really been doing it. I feel like if that happens, Protoss should just put down a robo and do the immortal all in with time stop. Because that, like, holding that off as a three-base Zerg, like, assuming you see Zerg open with the third hatchery before gas, I think if you see quick overlord speed, you just do that immortal all in. Because it's already so tight holding that off, especially with time warp, that the 100 gas early on to get overlord speed would make it almost impossible to hold off. That's why I haven't been doing it, out of fear of that. But otherwise, yeah, I would just go like double gas on 36 or single gas at like 4 or 430.
Okay. All right. So anyway, back to the question, are the tournaments going to be the same? You said you think they're going to be a little bit different. Jeff, do you have comments on this one as well?
Yeah, I mean, I unsurprisingly, because Ben's a very smart guy, I agree with him. I think it will be interesting, but not to the same extent as Wings of Liberty, where it was like the mechanics from all the games we came from were very different. But also, the beta period during Wings of Liberty was much more volatile, right? It was very different for Brood War and Warcraft 3, but also the numbers were shifting dramatically. And I mean, there's comparable situations like that in Heart of the Swarm, but I would argue not as many. And also, we're more familiar with the dynamic of StarCraft II and where they're trying to take it. So I think the tournaments like IPL and MLG, the story will be very accurate of who's been practicing, who's been working on this, and what have people come up with versus I'm in Korea, I'm still training for my GSTL, or I guess that's actually announced as HOTS, or I'm training for Pro League.
Right.
And now I'm playing HOTS on the side, so some shit's going to catch me off guard. I think that'll definitely be present at the early tournaments.
You could already see that in the MLG qualification matches. Some people clearly just have not touched it, like don't make a single HOTS unit. Well, that's kind of understandable for Zerg players. And others definitely have some idea what's going on.
All right. Well, I mean, it'll be interesting from a spectator perspective, from a caster perspective, because I think in the dawn of Wings, there was just sort of like this air of like, oh, you know, awesome. Look at what this is. This obviously needs to get fixed. And eventually that went away. You know, eventually it was like the better player won this tournament. Whereas before, I think that there was like the better unknown strategy won this tournament. So, you know, will MLG, will the upcoming GSTL in HOTS that GOM is doing, you know, which one do you think will get hit first? Do you think it'll be the GOM stuff? Do you think, like Idris said, it's already happened? Or do you think that we will have something like this for Heart of Swarm, keeping it, or for MLG, considering that MLG is the first tournament post-release, right? Is that accurate?
Yeah. It's like a week after.
It was like 3 days after.
3 days after, yeah. So,
which is also going to...
Oh, go ahead.
It's going to lead to something funny because they've announced, I believe, that they're taking down the beta March 1. And so then I imagine it won't be back up until release. So everyone's going to not play the beta, not play HOTS for 2 weeks up until the 3 days before the tournament.
Wow.
And then there's going to be how many changes in retail?
That's a good point. It'll probably come with a balance patch. So everyone will have 3 days experience.
Jeez.
Yep.
You know, just to kind of, in my opinion, this also, in general, once again acts as a little bit of a help me to the foreigners versus Korean storyline that is still present and still there. I do think in Korea, the majority of the Koreans are still more focused on Wings of Liberty. Obviously, we see them on the Heart of the Swarm ladder, so they're there. But there's going to be some stragglers. There's going to be people splitting their time. And also, there's just so many things different in Harvest Horn. And like Greg said, we've seen it already in the online qualification for the MLG. That I think it'll be interesting. You're going to see some upsets. You're going to see some people playing out of their mind because they've been working really hard at it. And you're going to see other people get completely confused and probably rage a little bit.
That'll be interesting. And just bringing up what was mentioned, if you do kind of want to see some Heart of Swarm matches in action, if you haven't already, you know, first off, MLG has been doing their qualifiers for MLG Dallas. And then GSTL preseason HOTS show match, excuse me, will begin Friday. Make that Saturday?
Sunday, I think.
Saturday.
Okay.
Saturday.
Which will be Friday night for us, I believe. StarTail versus Zubu. Also participating FXO, Prime, NASH, MVP.
Very excited.
LGAM and Axiom.
Go Axiom Acer, huh?
Yeah.
Kind of the
cool.
EGTL of GSTL, so.
In HOTS, nonetheless. So
yeah.
That'll be sweet. And it's free. Like, GOM's giving it away for free.
Good for them. One thing I want to say before we move on, perhaps to another topical subject, so I'm just kind of jumping in here.
Go for it.
There was a Reddit thread a while ago about the boost for the medevac that I think is such a good idea that it just deserves more attention. Someone had said, why doesn't it just cost medevac energy? And I really feel like it doesn't even have to be like 100 or something stupid like that. Maybe 25, maybe 50. But I feel like some cost other than a cooldown would make so much more sense for that speed, as opposed to like they just do it all the time. You know, like why would you not boost? Do you even lift? So just a shout out to that guy.
That's interesting. Greg, you obviously had a thought on that.
No, I don't know. I feel like the medevac is one of the smaller issues. I think, well, Hellbats, obviously, that's what everyone's complaining about. But I think Widowmines also have a lot of potential, particularly with bio, which is weird because they get used more with mech because, you know, obviously they're a factory unit. So people just assume there's synergy there. But I've played against a few people, Thorzane a while back, and then just random other Terrans, who would go like the pure bio, marine, medevac, marauder, but then also mix in either at least one reactor, maybe two reactor Widowmines, and just use that to push forward. And the DPS of the bio army is such that you can't just sacrifice units in to draw the Widowmine shots. It dies if you send it in piecemeal. But if you engage, then you take just the ridiculous damage from the Widowmines. So I think Widowmines have a lot of potential too. But Hellbats obviously look at that before they even talk about anything else.
Yeah, the boost thing's more problematic in like TVT and TVP.
Maybe.
But just talking about TVP here, like, yeah, Protosses definitely have a tough time dealing with it. Because if you think about the normal like 10-minute push that Terrans did, it's that, but now you have speed too. So it definitely deals like a lot of damage, and it's very problematic late game as well. Just means they're just so much more versatile with where they can do stuff, and they are going to do stuff. Yeah. Like,
go ahead, Ben.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, the energy thing. Like, I feel that's a good idea. But I then feel like medevacs start off with too little energy.
Need to start. Well, can I ask you guys a question? In your experience, where do you feel like the medevac boost is being used the most effective? Like, as a just, I need to get over to my opponent's base as quick as possible. As a, oh, shit, I got to get out of here. As a initial insertion, like, I mean, I've kind of seen it all over the place. I'm curious from your guys' perspective.
Let me tell you a story, Wheat.
Please do story time.
This happens to me about 4 or 5 times a day, and I gotta be honest with you. So, yes, this is the most angry I get every day. The worst thing to ever happen is you're fighting with the Terran mid-map, and they're like, you're here. And they pick up their army, and they go, they just fly past your entire army into your base, and they fucking murder everything. Whereas in the past, it was like, oh shit, we're fighting. And they're like microing their army, and maybe the medevacs get out because they started to make them leave earlier to outpace the stalkers that otherwise have a tough time catching them. But in StarCraft II, Heart of the Swarm, Terrans are like, oh, you fucking idiot. It's pre-blink and you're out here fighting a Terran. you're dead, and they just fly over your entire army into your base. So that's why I get pretty upset, and Ben says they start off with too little energy, and it's like...
I've done that recently against that Protoss that I couldn't beat, Jeff, and he recalled into his base, then time-warped me and stuff, and I just died, but... Like
as you should.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But, like, if he was out of position though, like which he was massively out of position, like trying to kill some, you know, shitty base that I had. But,
Or he could have tried to time stop you to fight out in the middle of the map, and then you just fly past him, and then he's like, "Er, wait, I'll come back."
Yeah. Oh, I'm not defending medevac drop at all. I'm just like there are.
That reminded me of something else I want to bitch about, though. The fucking... When Protosses put down a third Nexus and then move out with just whatever units they have. It could be, like, two sentries in a Zeld. It doesn't really matter. With the Mama Corps. And if Zerg is responding properly to the third Nexus and trying to get up tech or economy or whatever, then they do damage. And if not, they get away free with the recall. That's silly.
I've always said from the very beginning that I think the recall from the beginning is weird. Like, maybe you make that a spell for the mother ship as opposed to the Mama Corps. That would be one of the ways to make the mother ship more relevant again.
I think they said they don't want the mother ship to be relevant.
I know, and it's sad. Wow. I'll always speak about that as if they didn't say that, because that makes me sad.
That is really sad. Such a good unit, and the Invis has a lot of purpose too, and it's kind of a waste just kind of removing it.
Do you think, just based off of your comments here tonight, Idra, your previous comment, do you think that Protoss will be the most switched to race when it comes to, like, people playing HOTS?
As for pros, I don't think any pros are going to switch.
I just meant
extension of that question, I think Protoss is the best now, so that would follow. I'm just kind of depressed about Zerg. Because even the games that you win, it feels like it's gotten better. Like, initially... I felt really good about the way they were going with it. Like, they were buffing Zerg's lair units. They were making everything more mobile and active during the mid-game and stuff. But now people are just kind of figuring everything out again, and it's falling back into passive turtle. Like, wait for a mech death ball. Wait for a Protoss air death ball. Wait for Broodlord Infester. Especially because Protoss got additional defense. They got the Planetary Nexus. Terran got Widow Mines. Zerg got longer range Infesters, so you can always hold stuff in spine range. Just everything's getting more defensive again. It sucks.
I think Cloud switched race to Protoss already.
Did he?
Really?
Yeah. But I've heard of a few other people switching.
Actually, Morrow switched from Zerg to Terran. Those are the only two I can think of.
He did officially all times?
Yep.
That's all I've seen him playing, so I guess so.
I guess that's all I've seen him, on streaming. I'm curious. No one in the chat really said...
Oh, shit.
...that, hey, I'm definitely switching to... Toss, but I've seen it on Reddit here and there, and just a little curious. So, all right, let's move on. We kind of like touched on it a little bit earlier, jokingly talking about it, but it was announced earlier this week. The MLG Dallas casting team and Jeff, I had heard that you were going to be on there. I did not know that Anna was going to be a part of it as well. But I put in here, Jeff, for reals, is it nice to not have an open bracket so that you can cast? And if I'm not mistaken, this will be your first official MLG cast, right?
It's a bit conflicted, to be honest with you, because obviously as I step more into a whatever you want to call my role with EG, but it's obviously moving away from full-time player, my opportunities to play in tournaments become much more limited. So MLG was kind of always that tournament that I could count on playing in. But because Dallas doesn't have an open bracket and their internal seeding was based off of DreamHack, ESL, and MLG points, where obviously I wouldn't make enough points to be one of the top 10 North American players or whatever it is, the option to play here isn't there. So I've always been of the philosophy that I'm in a position where if I'm not playing... I'd love to cast. I'd love to do an analyst desk. I'd love to host, for God's sakes. I just want to be there. And when they came to me and said, hey, we're changing up the stage. You're no longer going to have a gigantic sponsorship revolving picture behind you. I once again got really excited and went to our management, and we started talking about it, and it works out. And it's a dream come true because for me, MLG is one of the biggest stages, but it's also... I still feel like it's the North American stage. I feel like MLG has a little bit of America, fuck yeah, built into it.
So, yeah, it does, of course.
So it's kind of exciting for me to be a part of that, and I'm really happy.
Right on. Well, of course, that's coming up in March. But is this definitely we're going to see more? I mean, you've talked about it a little bit, but more of In Control of the Caster, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love it. I actually have two other gigs that are being worked out that are on pretty big stages as well coming up. So there's going to be a lot more of that. And then speaking to Anna's role, too, it's because there's some people like they must be a package deal and stuff like that. But actually, we were communicated to and billed separately. And Anna's not going to be a host. She'll be watching the games, and then she'll hop up on stage and ask the players questions. And if you guys watched Lone Star, I thought she did a pretty good job. I mean, it's actually one of the harder things because the easy thing is to get up there and be like, so, like, you won that game with Stalkers, and, like, how do you feel about that? Like, where did that come from? And then everyone in the audience is like, oh, no, that's such a dumb question. So it's kind of a hard job, but she did a good job at Lone Star, so hopefully she'll do a great job there, too.
Awesome. Okay. Looking forward to that. Some other things. We got two more questions, but Alive and Oz leave Fnatic. I thought that this is kind of, it was interesting news just because those two, I felt, always did and represented this Western team very, very well. And not only did they leave, but it was quoted by Fnatic as saying, expect future non-Korean additions to the team. It says a lot of, and kind of talks and speaks to the times we've discussed how hard is it to run a Korean portion of an organization that, you know, begun in Europe or began in the United States.
Well, a couple interesting things came from this, because actually a while ago they had said, A, they're closing down their house. We already knew that.
Yeah.
But what they included in that message was they said, we'll be stepping away from the Korea scene and focusing on Europe. So in my mind, when they said that, that's like shortly after that Beol left, and now we have Alive and Oz leaving. Like, I always thought that was a natural progression. I think Jay left shortly after that as well. So this was not a surprise for me, but what was a surprise, and I heard, I think it was the Good Studio talk about this, but they actually kind of came out and said, we invested $250,000 wow. in our Korean project. And that is like, that's not just read over it and move on kind of numbers. That's like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
I think it's kind of interesting. This is a bit of a shift from the way foreign team recruitment has gone over the past year or so. We saw a big surge of Korean players moving to foreign teams like Complexity. A lot of the teams basically had their entire lineup become Korean. Fnatic did for a while. Complexity did.
Yeah, yeah.
Axiom is all Korean, I think. There's other teams as well, but those are some of the big ones. And so now we see a team actually dropping the entirety of their Korean segment. And it was one of those teams that moved over to mostly Korean and instead focusing on foreigners. So I'm not sure if that's going to be like a shift amongst everyone. I think Complexity has dropped most of their Koreans as well, but they haven't made a public statement about like officially focusing more on foreigners. But I'm kind of curious how it's going to work, because honestly, EG has bought up most of the like successful and marketable foreign players, and actually like turning a profit based entirely on them, on the rest of the foreign players. I think that's going to be kind of difficult.
What do you think it says about the state of things? You know, because we went through so many shifts in StarCraft II. We saw so many, like, you know, first it was who's the first team to pick up a Korean, and then it was, you know, a bunch of Koreans coming over, and then it was still the Korean team stay alone, and then it was the foreigners going over to Korea, and in through all of this, you know, no one's necessarily said, okay, we fucking figured it out. This is the method that you've got to use. Do you think this is a good thing for, you know, Western teams that they're still able to find success without, say, having to just jump into the Korean market, which, as we've seen, can be very expensive?
I think it scares me a bit, honestly. What I feel happened is that a couple of teams started to invest more in Koreans, and other teams saw that and thought, maybe this is the way to go. They kind of asked for less salary than the big name foreign players. They're obviously better players. They're more likely to have a breakout tournament result. But I feel like what's happening is a lot of those Koreans were pretty faceless. They didn't really draw much attention even when they were having success. Like Alive, mm-hmm. who just left Fnatic, the like least storied major tournament winner. He won IPL. No one remembers that at all.
It was the hardest tournament ever at the time.
It was an incredible achievement. Yeah. No one cared. I'm kind of worried that's what's happening is this is the start of many teams realizing that the Koreans, although they are really, really good and they should be the better investment, they're just not. And so that everyone wasted a lot of money on that whole little venture without having any proven results and without it turning a profit in the end. So
I don't know,
just my assumption.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that's anything anyone could have predicted, to be completely honest. I mean, we look at it, hindsight's always 20/20. We're like, yeah, that was kind of silly. But, I mean, honestly, you know, how do you predict something like that? So
I would agree with Greg, except for I would temper it a little bit. I think it's not so much that Koreans are they're not worth going in on. I just think if you go all in on them and don't capitalize on it, as Greg said, then you're literally just paying out money, because Alive was their flagship player. Oz took second in the MVP tournament. I think maybe the actual first. No, that's with the Kespa guys. That was their big tagline. But anyways, he took second. That's a big deal as well, but it didn't really take them anywhere.
Yeah.
And again, we come back to that number, $250,000. If you're shuffling out that much money, holy, I mean, you got it. You're hard pressed to earn that back, I feel. So it's more that they went all in. They went balls deep on this thing. And Koreans are hard to market, but then also Koreans have to win to be marketable. And there's other good Koreans on other teams. So winning is fickle. So I think the strategy of being all Korean has been proven to really be difficult. And I look at Axiom and I say, what do they need to do to be successful? They have to be in Korea, which is what they're doing. They have to be on stage at GSTL and GSL in general. And then they need people drawing attention to them, which I think you can trust Total Biscuit and Husky to do, but could we trust Fnatic to do that? And I think the answer at this point is no.
I mean, one thing Fnatic has going for it is a very long history in competitive gaming. You know, I mean, Sam Matthews, I remember the first time he even spoke the words Fnatic, and frankly, I thought Sam was crazy. I was like, dude, they're... You know, I mean, I believe in you and you're a hard worker, but holy shit, like, what you want to do is a tough thing to do. And he's done it. Like, Fnatic is a worldwide recognized, esports organization. But, you know, you're right. Just because they've had that success in the past, it doesn't mean that it can instantly translate. And since they are having a reasonable amount of success in Europe, you know, with League and at least in their StarCraft II division that they're trying to sort of get back together, CS as well, it makes sense. But is this a new shift? You know, Idra, kind of based off of what you said, I think it kind of is. I think that personality thing does go a long way. And the community and the fans have sort of, they've spoken and made that very clear, I think. What, any final thoughts on that to Muslim?
I mean, just to talk about what Greg said, like, Alive won one of the hardest tournaments to date.
Yeah.
And then for a while, he was regarded as this really freaking good player. And in fact, for a while, he was regarded as, like, the best player in the world, like, being ranked one on Korean ladder with multiple accounts and stuff. And there were videos on YouTube coming out of him, like, watching him first-person view. And this stuff was all really cool. Like, I was pretty hyped seeing Alive and stuff. But if these guys just, like, aren't winning anymore, they're not really getting their names out there in any other way apart from winning, and you haven't heard about them in 5-6 months or whatever. I don't know how much those guys were getting paid, but I'm assuming it was a fair whack given how good they were. But if they're not streaming or anything or not adding any value to like what they're actually doing, then yeah, they're just kind of like a money sink, really.
And to go off of Ben's comment, because this is going to go into too broad of a subject to talk about on the show, but just to kind of touch on and put out there so you know our audience can think about it. It's kind of interesting because the way we're set up in StarCraft II is kind of built on that. Like, there's so many tournaments that even after you win IPL4, this massive, amazing tournament, the story goes away in a week because we're already talking about the next tournament.
Yeah.
And then when he doesn't win that tournament, his story is gone completely. But then also Ben said, whoops, just hit my microphone, streaming. Koreans are not as much in favor of streaming because they want to hide their strategies because they come from a Brood War background mostly where if you got a Brood War replay from like a flash or something like that, it was like this little golden nugget that you found under the
Holy
ocean.
Grail.
Yeah, it was insane. But in StarCraft II, the expectation is you're on camera all the time, and they don't do that.
Another interesting, well, not interesting, more like terrible. But what Jeff said about how there's more tournaments so quickly, it's not only do you forget about someone who's won, there's also even kind of a negative effect where it's like, oh, he won that one, but then he lost this one. He must be slumping. And then all of a sudden you generate negative publicity instead. And you're like, wow, he's on the way down. He's not going to live up to that ever again. And so it's not only is it neutral, like a brainwashing kind of thing, it's actually just flat out negative.
All right, good discussion. If we open up the phone lines, if anyone kind of wants to expand on that a little bit, we absolutely can. But I want to get to two final questions that came in before we officially open up the phone lines. We should have plenty of time to do just that. And I think that this question is kind of awesome because it calls us out indirectly for comments that were made in previous shows. And then it talks a little bit about, you know, or asking us whether or not our thoughts have changed. But let me put what he writes. User James writes, quote, in previous episodes, you talked much about the, quote, social aspect of StarCraft II, which I'm guessing he's talking about how he said it sucked ass. Now they have groups and clans, associated chat, and other ways to communicate with friends and organizations. So does it meet your expectation? Do you think that it worked in BNet 1 because there wasn't other technology to facilitate communication? And are you using BNet 2 like you used BNet 1? And will this finally cure SC2 of its antisocial disease? So breaking it down just a little bit. Yes, on the show we've said, hey, BNet, you know, where are all the cool features we used to have? We used to be able to do this and that. Now here comes HOTS. It's in. In fact, it's in now, the beta. So have you been using it? Do you feel like it meets your expectation now? And then his additional question, which is, do you think that maybe it was cool in BattleNet 1 because we didn't have things like, you know, raid call, Skype, all these other things to communicate, Twitter and Facebook and shit like that. So, I mean, it's a good question to call out what we said in the past. What do you guys think?
I don't really think so. Like, to that last point, I remember all of the American players, like at the last little generation, me and Jeff have talked about it on here before. We all just had this vent channel we would hang out in every night and play together and talk together. But BattleNet still felt like a better experience even with that there. It's just like the main focus of BattleNet 1 was the social experience. Your entire screen, your entire home screen was a chat channel. Like, no matter where you were, you had to be in a chat channel. You had to like actively try to separate yourself from other people. And then you could pull up other options to go in and watch a replay or to browse the public games list and all that stuff. And here, like, it's not even an option. Like, they have the replay screen. They have the matchmaking screen. You know, they have everything else, but they don't have a chat channel screen. Like, it's always just this little aside that you can do to talk to someone. But your main focus is always the very solitary ladder, or maybe the UMS games, which are still a bit clunkier. It's not as fun just because it's not as open, not as free. And I really, really don't think this is just nostalgia, like us looking back with rose-colored glasses. I think it is, you know, genuinely, objectively worse and less social, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, think about the emphasis that Greg just hit on. Like, if the whole page was a chat channel, welcome to US West Channel 395 or whatever, and you're just talking to people, and then on the side you hit a tab, and that's custom games, and that's arcade, and that's matchmaking, and that's the ladder. Then that's the de-emphasized part. That's the part that's secondary to the social interaction. But it's reversed in BattleNet 2.0. It's now you are by yourself, but you have the option to go find a channel that's this little window that you could blow up. So I'm not making it, you know, you're not restricted that way. But it's de-emphasized. It's not as important. So he's correct to call us out to a certain extent because we said it sucks, and then Blizzard came out and made it better. I think the clan system's moving in the right direction. I think sharing replays is better. Right. And the little chat things are better. But I think you'll always have this feeling until you switch around the emphasis.
So, yeah. And this has been one thing that's bothered me a little bit, is that unless you're on that main screen, you cannot join any additional chat channel or group or anything like that, which I do find highly. So that's kind of what you're saying is that, you know, by putting it on the bar, sure, you can be active in what you've already opened, but taking away that emphasis where you're sort of in chat while you're doing everything else, that's kind of where it still falls short.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you know, I mean, I guess when you put it that way, it kind of does fall in line with maybe just the BNet One technology was a little bit different, and so it wasn't like, necessarily any one particular technology. It was just that integration.
Like the Egyptians, man, we can't explain how they did it. We don't know, but
it was lost in the ages since 1998.
You know,
all the aliens helped out in that 1.0.
In playing around with just the groups and the clans, which Blizzard did, like, reach out to a lot of the organizations and, you know, made sure that they could reserve this stuff ahead of time, which was you know, pretty nice of them. But it does have, like, this cool ability to share news and...
On the way to WCS, we both had this terrible, terrible flight ordeal where we got delayed and then we arrived at 2 p.m. and had to play at 3 p.m. pretty much. And... he lost his equipment on the flight over, and he just said, like, hey, give me some stuff to play with. And he got given the stuff, and he got to the grand finals anyway. So there's some people that are just blessed in a way that, you know, you're given some equipment, you're going to work with it. You know, you're given a piano, and you're going to play. Like, that's what Stefano does. So some players are just really good at it. Myself, I'm a little pickier, and so I couldn't do what Stefano did. But, it's part of the thing. Like, I've been sponsored by... different teams.
You're a little bit pickier, Ben?
Oh, really? Oh, a little bit. Yeah, I'm very picky. I've had the same mouse, like the exact same version, and not really been able to use four of them, but I've loved one of them. So, yeah, I'm extremely picky. But, just switching sponsors, you have to switch the gear. It's just what you have to do. And I don't think it limits you. Like, let's say you play with your ideal setup, you're going to be playing at 100%. If you play with a different setup, it's just about getting used to it. It's not like finding... you're going to be fine eventually.
All right, Jeff, you've had some experience changing gear before, too. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I agree with everything they said. Unfortunately for the viewers, I'm not going to be like, actually, Greg and Ben are totally wrong. But I think one thing that sticks out that Greg said that is especially true is it's part of the business. It's part of the industry. It very much so makes sense that when a team gets sponsored by a peripheral company, the reason they're sponsoring them is that so when Greg wins that tournament, he holds up the keyboard and he kisses it and he holds it and goes, it's all because of you, Black Widow. I love you. And they need that exposure. But can you imagine Greg wins a tournament and he holds up his indiscriminate, like, Logitech keyboard, and he's, like, dangling his G5 mouse, and Razer's like, the fuck! You know, like, it doesn't make any sense. So, if we want those sponsorships, they need their players to be using that gear, and you just have to accept that. It's not ideal. I can tell you that every single pro gamer on every team would probably use one mouse, one keyboard, one headset, all from different companies, and that would be their best setup, but that's never going to happen.
In terms of, you know, switching where, you know, Greg, you said, well, hey, sometimes it just takes a matter of like a few days of just practice. In general, is it the weight? Is it the feel? Is it the way that it tracks? Is it the natural sensitivity? Like all those things? Or generally, what is the most difficult thing for you to sort of figure out and overcome?
For me, the biggest thing is usually the weight of the keys, like how hard they are to press down, also the activation point with mechanical ones, and the size of the keys. Razer keys are a little bit smaller than the SteelSeries keys, so that takes some getting used to. And back when I switched from the DT35 to the SteelSeries keyboard, the keys were much, much heavier because it was going from membrane to black switch, and so that bugged me a lot. But yeah, with mice, I just like play around. I find a speed that's close to what I'm used to. In a few games, I'm used to it. Like, I've used a Mini Optical and a Kinzu and a Sensei and a Logitech G5, which is like the entire range of mice sizes, and I'm fine with all of them. I'm just very not thinking about that. But the weight and feel of the keys on the keyboard is a very, very big deal to me.
All right. Well, hopefully that answers Anon's question. And like kind of Greg kicked it off with, it's something that just happens in sort of these professional environments, and I guess you just deal with it. There's not any sort of, there's not magical formula or potion that you drink that makes it happen overnight. But I certainly could imagine that maybe like the day before a tournament, it could be really bad. But otherwise, you prepare for those sorts of things. And that being said, I think we're going to have an opportunity to open up the phone lines here just a bit. And let me make sure that I've got all this going. I think any other topics that we missed, guys, or anything that we wanted to talk about? No?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. I'm trying to find my stupid overlay that says just call here, but I don't have it. That's okay. I'll just give out the phone number and put it in chat. It is 909-581-8519, and you can call us there. And for those of you who are smart enough, you know where you can probably Skype as well. But we'll go ahead and start taking some calls here in a moment. I might have to restart my Skype too as well. So maybe I should have planned this one a little bit better, boys.
Killing esports.
Fucking all day, every day, man. Doing what I can. All right, I'm going to restart Skype then. So sorry if you're trying to call right this moment and not getting through. Sorry about that. How about that EGTL Pro League?
Oh, you're restarting the other Skype.
I'm restarting the other Skype, not yours. Not this one. Sorry.
Yeah, Pro League was offline for a week, and it was like it was a hole in my life. So I can't wait for it to come back.
What is it? Seventh right now?
Oh, you're muted right now, Greg.
Oh. Greg was muted.
I just said it's really nice having Korean StarCraft at like a time that we can watch comfortably.
Yeah.
Without staying up till 3 a.m.
Yeah, that does suck. Well, the first night's still generally kind of nice, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's what he's saying. Two out of the four matches are played at a really nice time.
Oh, right, exactly. All right, let's take our first caller. Let me make sure that you'll be able to hear them right here. And we got Biscott. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey guys, what's up?
What is up? What's up? Biscott? No?
Okay.
All right, man. We got the what is up.
He's straightforward call.
And that's it. He's still on. I don't know if he accidentally muted himself or what. Okay. I don't know. We'll hang up and take this next guy. We got area code 347. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi. I had a question for In Control. I know he was talking about how earlier MLG won't be having the open bracket anymore, and I was wondering if he was still going to be continuing to play in as many tournaments or qualifiers as he can, or if you're going to be moving mostly into casting now.
Yeah, thank you for asking. I will. Had I had enough points to play in the qualifier for this round, I absolutely would have taken it. And in the future, MLG's format's kind of up in the air. They've definitely said that Dallas is an anomaly, so we'll see how it goes from here. But I still want to play. It's not going to be a definitive yes or no to everything. It's not like I'll play in every single MLG from this point forward, because it's still pretty awesome to cast. But if I can play, there's a good chance that I will.
Any other questions, caller?
No, that's all. I wanted to ask. Last week I called, or the week before I called, with like a dumb question, and I got the flower answer.
Doing good, man.
Yeah, you're doing good work, buddy. You're doing good work. All right, thanks a lot. Take care.
You too.
Right, bye-bye. We'll take the next one then. We've got an unknown phone caller. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, do you think in terms of the overall game that some things that Blizzard did, like in general, like, how am I going to explain it? Like, for the long term... Hello?
Yeah, we're here. Go
hello,
ahead.
Hello, hello.
Yeah. In terms of, like, the long-term longevity of the game, do you think they really, like, mucked up some fundamental aspects of the game that they're not willing to go back to fix? Like, for one of my examples is, let's say, like, Protoss Warpgate. Do you think they really, like... I know people in the start were saying that Warpgate in general didn't seem to fit the Protoss. Like in terms of, like, Warpgate units, like, you know what I mean? Comparing to Gateway units in, like, Brood War.
Anyone want to tackle this one?
I don't know. I think there's a few things. Like, Force Field, I think, is the go-to. It just creates this situation where Force Field is super, super strong, so they have to make Warpgate units relatively weak. You know, you compensate for it, and then you get the situation where either you hit perfect force fields and you destroy them, or you miss them even just a bit.
Greg, you're super quiet.
Yeah, can you hear that?
Oh, my mic fell off.
That's okay.
But yeah, as I was saying, force field is kind of the go-to when we're talking about this situation. It's just such a powerful ability that they had to make Warpgate units relatively really weak to compensate for it. So you end up with these situations where... Well, first off, Force Field just has specific applications where it's really, really strong blocking off a ramp or whatever. But in battles, you either hit your Force Fields and you destroy them, assuming an otherwise equal game, or you miss them even just a little bit and the army gets in an awkward position and then they just destroy you because your units are relatively too weak. And so it makes for a lot of shitty, dumb-looking battles. I think that's the most fundamental problem they've had that they are adamantly unwilling to fix. And then there's other smaller things, but Force Field, I think, would be the big one.
Go ahead, caller.
If I could just clarify what I meant is, like, do you think there are some things they're refusing to change because just because they're already there?
Well, I mean,
and they don't really want to, like, go back.
It's somewhat of a loaded question too, because, you know, you mentioned Warpgate as an example, and, like, when you're about ready to fire into your second expansion, I don't think you could go, by the way, gentlemen, we've removed Warpgate from the game. I mean, first off, no one will admit to that being broken over there at Blizzard. Not insinuating that it is, but I guess there's so many things in the game that it would be impossible to change at this point.
Yeah, I guess what I mean is kind of like a Brood War-esque feel to it. Going back to the classic way of how some things are done.
They changed the carrier micro. I mean, that's like, I suppose, one step in the right direction.
I mean, it's hard to come up with an example, but, like, I do feel that Blizzard are very set in their ways, and for a long time they were kind of like the big dogs, you know, like, and they have produced, like, some phenomenal games, but it's very hard to think of an example that I think it's been a fundamental problem for a long time. I don't think there is anything. I think Blizzard are doing a pretty good job with what they're implementing. Yeah.
All right. Caller, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. And we'll go ahead and move on. We're going to take area code 951. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey.
Hello. What's your question?
So my question is... basically, when I was watching NASL, the topic was kind of based around the idea of a free-to-play game. And I kind of wanted to hear the pro perspective on that idea, in sense of they were talking about how League of Legends is kind of a top game as of right now over StarCraft II. And I just wanted to kind of know what your guys' thoughts were on a change of free-to-play.
Sure. Well, first off, we thank NASL The Pulse for, you know, taking tons of past content from Inside the Game, because we've discussed it on this show probably, I don't know, 5 to 8 times. But, love those guys over there. It just goes to show how much content there is to go around. Any of you guys want to, want to tackle this one at all?
Yeah, we have talked about it a few times. I think... it's kind of an interesting subject because it's so different from how they do things now. And, I mean, the obvious thing is to look at League of Legends and be like, well, they're so successful. Wouldn't that work for StarCraft II as well? And I think there's multiple fallacies at play with that. And I don't know. For me personally, I think Heart of the Swarm should be treated like an add-on to Wings of Liberty, where it's not full price. But I think that's already the case. Isn't it like $50?
It is.
So they say $40. I'd say 20 or some shit. Or I'd hopefully, and they did this with Wings of Liberty, so maybe they'll do it with Heart of the Swarm. But throw out trials out there, and instead of it being 1 week, make it a month. Get people hooked on the game and have it be $20.
I think free to play model works, man. I think it could work. Like
yeah,
I always like a scrap first the foundation for like, well, how would it work? And just look at it from this perspective. If tomorrow StarCraft II is made free, how many people would download it, do you think?
Probably a lot.
I don't know if I necessarily want to quantify a number, but the fact that it is free suddenly makes people go, well, fuck, I've never played that game, and I'm not going to spend $50 on it, so I'll download it, and I'll at least check it out.
I wonder how many people you make angry there that, like, spend $60 or whatever.
Well, that's definitely one of the arguments. If, however, as someone who has spent $60, if I felt like making the game free to play was going to increase the number of people that came in to StarCraft II, and that meant that I could buy fucking top hats for my Banelings and little capes for, you know, my Zerglings for 99 cents a piece because I can, because I hold a job and I've got money to spend, I would fucking do it. If it meant that, you know, I got three maps and to unlock all the maps that I would play, you know, on the ladder or whatever, that I might spend $4.99. I think I would do it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're earning, you know, galactic credits, Jeff, and you're able to unlock those maps just by playing the game and having the galactic credits. So then it all comes back to, is there enough in the game when all these new players download to educate them, to get them ready to fight on the ladder, to give them incentive to play on the ladder, etc. So, Greg, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah, I was muted. That would be my concern, is I think it's much harder to get sucked into StarCraft 2, because with League, I think it works really, really well. You start out playing for free, and it's just a lot of fun, and you're like, oh, I can unlock that champion. It's like a progression. But with StarCraft, you just started out, and you don't really have any idea what's going on. If you don't have any commitment, I kind of worry that people are just going to stop playing after they play one ladder game and don't know what the units do, and it's like, this is silly.
And that goes both ways, too. There's people that'll say, like, you know, the opposite's true as well. They try it out, it's expensive, it's alienating, but then there's this, like, free-to-play game that they spend $0 on that's immediately accessible, so they go try that out, and they're grabbed. I agree with you in the long run. I'd rather people make an investment, and then they're like, well, I spent $60 on this, I should give it a fair shake. But I don't know, this subject for me, I'm not trying to be condescending, but I just feel like it's not that interesting, because with Blizzard being attached to Activision, with the way they have things set up, I don't think it could ever switch to free to play, and it's like us talking about.
Fair enough.
Imagine if America was socialist, it'd be like, yeah, but it never will be. And
yeah, I agree.
Why would we talk about it?
I think it'd be interesting. I don't know. I think Riot and League clearly have a system that works very, very, very well. And the one thing I really like about it is how well it synergizes with esports. That's why Riot hosts all these tournaments themselves, is because you see a pro gamer playing a champion, you're like, ooh, that looks really fun, I want to try him out, and then you go buy him or whatever. It's much more effective to have that kind of advertising. Whereas us playing the game and doing tournaments, it's definitely still advertising, and it keeps our game alive, and it popularizes a little bit, but it's not nearly as much direct profit just from us.
I'm
very jealous of this.
Built on a model where you cannot purchase functionality and create a fair balanced game, whereas like you can have 100 plus champs, and if you don't own all of them, it doesn't affect the game. It maybe affects your ability to play the game, whatever. It is a good point. Like, everything that could be free to play for StarCraft II would likely be cosmetic, and that I'm not sure is a good enough incentive. But anyway, caller, thank you for your call, appreciate it, and have a good night. And I was just kidding about the polls. They can use our content anytime they want.
The Reddit thread's already up.
It is, of course. Area code 514. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Oh, hi.
Hello.
So, greetings. This is Singularity. My question is for Idra. Can I ask him a question directly?
I think that it would be okay that you ask him a question directly. Go ahead.
Okay. Idra, have you ever killed a man?
No.
That's all I had to say.
Craig deals well in the awkward.
I think what was more interesting is that Greg actually paused for a moment, thought about it. You know,
I thought you were just going to cut him off.
I thought you were like, let's see. Well, there was that one time, but okay. Area code 217. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
I was just wanting to say first.
Can you turn down your stream in the background? That'd be awesome.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. Wanted to say first, thank you to all these guys for what they do. You guys got me into live stream. EG's my favorite team. My question was going to go to all three of them. I know it's a really stupid question, but if you guys had to play an off race, you know, and sometime, what would you guys play or choose?
All right. The Muslim, if you had to play off race, who would you go with?
In Wings of Liberty, I really enjoyed Zerg a lot. But currently, I think Protoss is really cool. I feel with good micro and stuff, it can definitely be pulled off on Warp Prisms and Oracles. I feel there's a lot of diversity now with them. So, yeah, I'd play Protoss.
Right now, I think I'd play Terran. It just feels like their new units have the most, like, they're the most fun uses. Like, Mothership Core is super, super useful in some situations. Tempest fixed a lot of problems in the late game, at least for Zerg. I don't know too much about PvT. Protoss got, like, units that were very helpful and made them much better in some scenarios, but they don't feel particularly fun to use, whereas Hellbats are great for Harass. Widowmines have very diverse and interesting uses. It just feels like Terran would be a lot more fun to play now, and when you're playing an off-race, that's all you're really looking for. I think Terran would be a lot cooler to play than Protoss.
It's always been Zerg for me, just not for any particular reason than that I love Zerg and played Zerg in Brood War, and it just would absolutely have to be Zerg.
All right. There you go, caller.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot for the call, man.
Peace.
I do love that, and we've made fun of this so many times in the past, but there's something about people that when they do a prank call, they breathe differently than the rest of everyone else on the planet. Like,
it's because that moment, it's kind of like when you do have to make the decision to kill a man, and you're like, fuck, I committed to this.
It's come down to this.
And then they, like, no, my favorite part is that it takes some 4 or 5 seconds to, like, roundabout. I'm like, dude, yeah. I give you the opportunity right away. Like, what's your question? Well, I've been thinking about it. I've got a question that I want to ask Greg. Greg, can I ask Greg a question? I mean, it's like, dude, I said ask the question. Like, there has to be a fucking school that these guys can go to learn to do this shit better. It doesn't exist. I guarantee
I think it's
you.
Just the type of person who wants to troll, they are incapable. You know, they're just such low forms of humanity that they're incapable of actually doing it well.
Yes, I think so. I think so. All right, let's take another call. We've got area code 201. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, this is a question for all four of you. What would you, if you had a chance to add one race to StarCraft, what would it be and why?
One race of what? What?
Of
just add a race, you said.
I mean, I'll kick it off. Yeah. I would just add a race of cats. You would have cat units that would mount other cats and go on an assault. You'd have, like, flying cats, the Nyan cat, maybe the cat that comes from the ceiling cat. And, like, it's sort of a harass unit. So,
a long cat is, like, their nightest form.
Greg and I asked ourselves, at what point does Blizzard say, fuck it, let's go pandas? You're one of those guys.
No, that's my kid. He'd be like, oh, they're big siege panda. Panda Marine. Yeah.
They have a siege panda?
I don't know.
That would be awesome.
Same for StarCraft 2, I think.
Oh, shit. I don't know. I mean,
like the long cat nightest one, though.
You do?
It's like loaded up, and then it extends and lands wherever it wants on the map. Like it's
maybe,
front paws dropped
down. I just need to create a whole mod where like every unit is changed to a cat. So I mean, like a cat Colossus would be so awesome. Just put some cute
was
ears on
it. On top of my computer, and when we started talking about the cat race, one eye open and it's now staring.
All right, in all seriousness, do you guys have a serious... I mean, because obviously the caller's being serious, if we could add a race. I mean, it's always been... It's like, yes, cats. I like this.
I was kind of thinking of, like, an alternate game where they have similar, or, like, they have races and stuff. Like, Protoss are kind of like Tau, in the range and high-tech and stuff. Terran are kind of like Space Marines, I guess, and Zerg are like Tyranids, so...
Protoss are the Eldar. Thank you very much.
You think they're like Eldar?
Yes.
Not like Tau?
Tau was added later,
yeah,
much before the war.
But they're like the high-tech weapons and stuff. And
yeah, there's similarities, except the Tau are all ranged. They have no melee, whereas Protoss has Zealot as like their kind of main thing.
Either way, I'd like throw in orcs or something.
Be like, fuck it, orcs!
Yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool.
Dude, all they have to do is open up a fucking space-time distortion portal and let the orcs pour out, and suddenly they've got it. They're like, we have the next fucking 10 years of StarCraft right here. It could happen. Caller, do you have a specific race that you would like to see? We did not mean to make a mockery out of the question.
Hang on.
I think it just threw us off.
I was thinking about it. Like, it would be cool if you could get like a Warcraft versus StarCraft. Like, you know how they do like Tekken versus Street Fighter?
There you go.
Cool.
That's exactly what
like
Ben
that.
Was hoping. And... Jeff, you do have an answer. You do.
I actually have more of an answer for Ben. The reason it's Eldar is because if you go back into their lore, the Eldar had lost most of their home planet, so they were traveling around in a, like, can't remember what it's called, but it's basically a giant biodome. And that same story is with Protoss. They lost Ire, so now they fucking teleport back to some other place, and they are looking for their home.
Oh.
They are space gypsies.
Caller, thank you very much for your call. Take care. Have a good night.
I didn't get to add my race.
Go ahead. I thought...
Now, ahead. The obvious answer is Zelnaga. People would like to see Zelnaga in the game.
No question. What about the callers and everybody's being like, it's because, you know, the stream delay. You're watching the stream expecting, you know, an answer to whatever question, and then all of a sudden you got DJ Wheat talking in your ear directly to you, and usually you're off a couple seconds in that. And the second thing was just Blizzard and money and, you know, the people who have already paid for expansions or games and going free to play. They clearly don't care. I mean, look at the way Warcraft has been and the, you know, half a dozen expansions that people have paid $40 or whatever for. And then if you catch them at Christmas time, you can get all of the expansions for less than the cost of one, you know? So they clearly aren't too concerned about that, in my opinion. I was just, I guess if there was a question, it would be, what do you guys think about that?
Well, number one, it's been said on every show that's ever been based on the internet that when you call into a show, you got to mute your stream and then just use the Skype call to communicate. That way there's no delay at all. So that's why we
Jeff,
still kind of...
I just want to throw something else out there. If you'll note, every single time I open up a call, I say, hello, we've got Kevin, or I say area code, blah, blah, blah. This is actually not because I think that you guys give a flying fuck about what area code is calling in, but it's actually because I want to give that person on the other line a few seconds when they realize that their Skype is connected, and that is why that is built into the buffer of every single phone call that we take. But with that being said, your second follow-up in control.
Seconds, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I'm going to pull it completely out of my ass, and that's...
Do it.
People get mad. I'm going to go ahead and guess that when Blizzard did Warcraft 2 and then Warcraft 3, they weren't partnered with Activision, and they didn't sell nearly as many copies as they are in this day and age with StarCraft 2.
Warcraft, I misspoke. I meant the World of Warcraft and their various expansions at 40 bucks a piece.
Okay, well, I would say
like there's five
that,
expansions and they were 40 bucks a piece, yeah. But if you catch them right at Christmas time, you can get all the previous four for the cost of one.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think with that business model, not to put my tinfoil hat on too much, but they're basically saying once you're roped into World of Warcraft, we got you. You'll buy every edition no matter what. So when they reduce the cost, They're hoping to grab the people that somehow escaped their tantalizing carrot that they had dragged in front of you for 5 years. And they're like, well, now you can buy all of the Frozen Thrones for just $40. And someone's like, well, you know what? I was going to play that game for 10 hours a day, but I just thought to myself that $60 was too much, and then, you know, paying $19 a month. So I'm just going to go ahead and do it now. That makes a whole lot more sense. I'll save $20 out of the $500 I'll spend this year. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's also hard to break a business model if you just basically sold to Activision, like, okay, here's our business plan for the next 6 years of this game. You can't really go in and go, all right, we've got a fork in the road here, and we'd like to take it this direction. It's like, well, wait a fucking second. This is not what you told us 4 years ago. It's like they've already launched down this path. Like, any grand deviation would be really, really difficult, I think, to pull off, especially in their turnaround and their cycle in terms of development.
You bring up a good point, though, because there are separate business models at play, and one of the arguments I had made was that Blizzard won't change their business model, and I would argue that they'll change it from game to game, but not within that game. But I still think what you say has a valid point to it, so thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Kevin, thank you for your call.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, man. All right. Take another one. Sure. We've got Jerry on the line. Hello, Jerry. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, DJ Lee.
Hello.
I just wanted to, like, comment on the Bounder channels in, like, the StarCraft 2 and Blue War. Like, okay. I feel like with the there's one thing that, like, I don't think you guys brought up, said, like, you can only be in one channel at one time, right? And so, like,
in BNet, you're talking about in original,
yes,
BNet, yeah.
In BattleNet 1, or, like, mostly IC Cup, because that's where we played, but like, I feel like that just, like, focusing you to, like, to stick to one channel, like, it grows, like, a community of players, like, let's say on a clan or on a team, right? It's like, this is where you go to hang out, you know? This is your second home on, like, StarCraft. And, like, obviously, like, in StarCraft 2, you don't have that kind of stuff, but...
Right, so you're suggesting not that we should just go back to that. You're not suggesting that we should revert it, but you felt like that sort of forced into one channel kind of created a community organically.
Yeah, it feels like you become like for example, when I was playing on IC Cup a lot, I joined a team, and it feels like that every day when I go on, it feels like I'm just like seeing my old friends over and over again, you know, like just being part of like a family, basically.
Sure. I could see how that would create, like, a... I'm actually in this space, as opposed to I have 10
right.
channels open, and I'm just kind of on BattleNet. So, yeah,
right. Like, yeah, like, on StarCraft 2 right now, it's like, you go to any channel, it's like, well, there are people here, and there are people online that are, like, you know, the green circle icon. But you don't know if they're actually here, right? They could be in a different channel, just, like, talking to other people and stuff. And I guess it kind of works in Brood War, kind of like the same thing, but like,
right.
I feel like it was more emphasized on, you know, this is where you belong.
All right, Jerry, thank you for your call. Some interesting comments, and I mean, like, it definitely plays into sort of what BattleNet was originally, but it, you know, I came from Quake. We used IRC. We were obviously in our own clan channel, but then we were in 10 other channels. So I'm not sure if it is necessarily the main reason, but I could certainly understand it could split your attention a little bit. We got another caller here. We have got Javier on the line. Hello, Javier. Welcome to Inside the Game. No. Wow. Javier bolted real fast, you guys. Oh, wait. No. He called back, maybe. All right, we're going to give us another try. We've got Javier. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question? Hello, Javier.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello.
What's your question?
Hello.
Hello.
I wanted to ask something to Aydra.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you like... Oh, shit.
Just don't, man. Just think about your life. Think about your family.
Stormholds?
Okay, thank you, Javier, for your call. It's okay. So, do you like Swarmhost?
Actually, Greg, the question was, do you like Swarmhost?
What did he say at first? Was it Mothership?
No. He said, oh, God.
Swarmhost? Oh.
He said, oh, God. Kind of like, you realized
what was
happening.
This guy was on the cliff, and he was going, I'll do it. I'll dive into it. And then we were like, don't do it. And he's like, do you like the Swarmhost?
No, I don't like Swarmhost. They're terrible.
Yeah.
I thought they were good for a while, but it was just a tease.
I want to produce a show with Greg called something to the effect of like Mr. Rogers' other neighbor, or it'd be the opposite of Mr. Rogers, where it's just like, hey, boys and girls, sit down and shut the fuck up. And train may or may not come. Don't really like trains. And then someone will call and be like, Mr. Rogers, what about the Mariners? And he'd be like, I don't watch baseball because it's a terrible sport. And you're an idiot.
And you're an idiot. And you smell, too. Thanks. We got our next caller, unknown phone number. That's how he's labeled in Skype. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hey, guys. It's Charles. I guess my thing's not set up right, but like ED a lot, it's cool. I was wondering how you guys felt about the disappearance of Sir Scoots. Like, do you feel it on a personal level, or is it more like kind of he was higher away from the house?
It's an interesting question, considering Sir Scoots is currently doing his Real Talk right this moment. But the question is how does the, I guess, disappearance and or just the lack of Sir Scoots had any sort of effect on you guys?
Well, he's been on the team since before any of us joined, so we were very used to having him around. His role changed a bunch, like throughout the years, but he was always very closely involved with us, particularly me and Jeff, because towards the end he was doing much more One More Game TV stuff. So whenever we had to go over to his house to, you know, produce the Tips and Tricks videos or cast MCSL or something, you know, that was directly under his management. So it's kind of weird not having him be as directly involved anymore. Plus, he's also just like a really good friend to all of us. And we live in the area, so we still see him once in a while. But you know, it's just different than he used to.
Yeah, I think it's just sad, to be honest with you. Sir Scoots brings so much tradition, and I think what everyone would absolutely agree with is he brings passion. And I know that word's thrown around a lot in esports, but he's actually so passionate he can't stop from like yelling at people, from like visibly shaking, from like that rage you see from him. That's not fake. That's actually how much he cares. So anytime he moves away from anything, you feel a little bit like disconcerted with the idea that now there's not as much backing to that because there's not someone that literally pours their soul into it. So EG is, you know, it's going to move on. It's going to tick on. But in my personal opinion, he'll be missed tremendously. And I feel like any organization's better with Sir Scoots a part of it.
I can't do anything but echo what's already been said. Scott's a really nice guy, and yeah, I'm sad he's not around as much anymore.
Caller, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Have a good night. Take another. By the way, I wanted to thank Charles because he said his name, and that's awesome. And everyone should say that. Hey, guys, this is Charles' question. Good job. Good job, Charles. You did great. We got our next caller, unknown phone number. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for having me. The question I had is just a quick one. It's regarding balance is obviously hugely important in this game. It's a very professional game. So I just wanted to know or understand more, you know, the relationship between balance and how fun the game is to play as a professional player. I remember Hitcher mentioned something earlier about the changes to layer tech units, you know, like with regards to mobility and stuff. But then, like, there was changes to the range to the Infestor and whatnot that kind of created, you know, more death ball scenario that we're used to in Winds of Liberty. I just wanted to know, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, how fun the game is, you know, with your respective race or whatever. And, you know, is that something that's important to you as a pro player, or is it something that you just persevere because, you know, you're getting paid to do it? Just your thoughts on that. Thank you.
I can answer this for everyone. Ready?
Yeah.
Ben thinks it's a jolly good game. It makes you a strong old chap, and it's quite fun. Greg has never had this much fun in his life, thinks the game is as close to balance as it's going to get. He's excited. He's entertained. He's enthralled. Every day is a new adventure for Gray. He wakes up and he stretches his arms and he goes, "I love Hobbs and I love Sheeple and I love StarCraft." That's his answer.
That's surprisingly accurate.
And yeah. Jeff.
And then what I say is, I don't know. I find the game kind of boring. Okay. No, actually, I say I like it too. And I wake up and I stretch my arms and I go, "Barrison's great, and I love my wife."
Well, maybe if I was a little bit more specific, I know.
Yeah, please go ahead.
The community was really up against Fungal being, you know, like anti-micro, right? Like, you know, it took a lot out of, you know, players' ability to do something. I just feel like they haven't really gone away with that. I feel like this is one example. You know, shoot me down if I'm wrong. Time Warp and Force Field in combination do a lot of the same of what Fungal did in relations to micro and, like, creating a good viewer experience in terms of, you know, pros being able to kind of battle at each other with them, you know, good micro and whatnot. I don't know. Maybe,
Force Field's always been, like, another one of those anti-micro spells that people complain about. Wizards.
Does it just add another one, Greg? Like, I think that's a great question, by the way, caller. I mean, did we just add another Fungal? I mean, I've looked at it and I've been like, "Oh, Time Warp, it's all shiny and new. It's going to be so great." But when you put it that way, that it is just kind of another Fungal, you know, you can't micro your Marines once that fucking Time Warp hits.
It's not nearly as bad as the other two, but yeah, it is in the same vein.
I have the answer.
Oh, yeah? Cat race?
I just thought of this. It's actually better than the cat race. I'm going to come out and say it. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Hey, and I hope someone from Blizzard's listening. Mike Morheim, I'm looking at you, okay? You cast Time Warp. Instantly, every unit that's inside the Time Warp, it enters into, like, almost a fighter game, but it's like you're in bullet time from, like, the Matrix. And it becomes a keyboard and mouse fighter game that is so micro-intensive that it completely blows people's minds where they're like, it's an anti-micro spell. No, fuck you. This is more micro than ever before. Like, you're fighting.
It zooms in.
But then also it's like, you're like hip thrusting them. You could even like lick their ear a little bit. Like, you're controlling everything. So much micro.
It zooms in and there's like this epic quick time event battle that takes place between, like, then you can have some fucking epic zoom ins on some faces. It's like, you're trying to. In all seriousness, because it is like a good question overall. Do you guys ever get hung up on the "we do have to play it"? It takes away from the fun, you know, like, or it takes away from the overall experience, just having to grind it out over and over and over.
No, like Jeff said, I love every minute of my time with StarCraft 2. It's a fucking terrible game. I hate Blizzard for what they did to StarCraft 1.
Tried to stop it from happening.
He tried to stop it.
To balance out his answer, some people really don't enjoy it because it's not what it could have been and it's not what the predecessor was. I personally acknowledge that it's not Brood War, but at the same time I understand that it's never going to be and never will be, so I try to make the best of it, and I really like the shot in the arm that is Heart of the Swarm. I like the difference in play. I do like that while Greg says that the game gets very passive in the late game and it's more of the same, I don't necessarily disagree with him, but how you got there has new options, at least for the time being, and I find it really exciting that way.
I'm going to take the approach, like, not based on the game at all, but playing a game for fun and playing a game for a job, at first are two things that are very in sync, like very linear on the same path. But once it gets to the point where this is your job and you have to play it no matter how you feel about it, it does get stressful. Like, luckily, I'm in a position right now where I'm really enjoying StarCraft 2, but there have been times where, with any game I've played, if I've had to play it professionally, that there are going to be dry patches where, you know, normally you go to your PC or your console and you just play a game for fun because you want to. Like, there's times where I've had to just go to the PC and play, be it whether I want to or not. So, I think everybody will experience those moments, but yeah, luckily StarCraft 2's a deep enough game right now that I think I'll find it fun for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's just like, it's much better than people who have actual jobs that they're forced to do. Like, we're forced to play video games on the bad day. Like, it is important to keep it in perspective, as far as that goes.
All right. Caller, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great night. We're going to be wrapping up. Our last caller with the... There it is. Last but not least, here on Inside the Game, episode 61. We've got Goatlust on the line. Hello, Goatlust.
Oh, g'day. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Wrapping up another show. Hopefully you enjoyed it.
Another job well done, yeah.
Oh, thanks. I like that you keep telling us that every week, even when you don't mean it. That's really, it means a lot. No, I'm just kidding. What's up? What do you got for us this week?
Yeah. Now, you know, recently, good old gentlemen at GOM released their thing, you know, their little HOTS fucking beta GSTL shit, you know?
Right.
And I just sort of was thinking about how people had said there was scheduling conflicts between GSTL and Pro League, which meant that, you know, teams couldn't play both of them. I was wondering if you guys think there's anything that can be done, like, format-wise or otherwise, to allow the two big things in the space to coexist and to have a bit more ability for teams to play in both things in the team leagues. Do you think that's possible?
I'm sure it's possible, but when you throw in OSL or whatever ends up happening with Keswa's individual league and GSL, and that becomes a lot of work for the players. And they could do that, but the combination of how much time investment that would be and the fact that Kespa and GS, like GOM, GSL, whatever, they're not the bestest of friends. Like, I'm sure to one extent they want competition, they want to force the other out of the space or to, like, be the successful organization of the two. The combination of that plus the fact that the teams really don't have enough time to do everything to the best of their abilities. Like, you already see the Kespa players saying, they don't focus on foreign tournaments. And even back in GSL, like, GSL was always the focus. People would skip foreign tournaments. They wouldn't really prepare for them. They would just go and play them with whatever abilities they had. Combination of that stress on time, I don't see it happening at all, one way or the other. I don't think anyone wants it to, and I think it would, like, produce a lower quality product if they tried to do everything.
I mean, throwing it out there, like, the best case scenario for the teams, the fans, would be some sort of combination of the leagues that would just allow them all to I mean, how much more interesting?
I would like the champion of Pro League to fight the champion of GSTL. That'd be sick.
And then the winner just basically gets that to keep that league alive. So it's like a league kill match. We find our best team. You bring your best team, and we have a league kill match.
The fucking stress on Life vs. Flash in the ace match of that. And it's like their heads explode.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that they could ever live in harmony, but honestly, that would be probably the best. You know, eliminate the conflicts because there is some sort of conglomerate that all works together.
They're different, too, though. Like, GSTL, in the past at least, has been a very short scheduled thing, whereas Pro League right now is slotted to be a year-long event. Like, it's insane how long it is.
Right, fair enough.
So the time commitment and stuff, like, that's fine, but again, I find this being kind of a small issue where it's like, I don't need Kespa teams in the GSTL, and I don't need GSTL teams in Kespa. Like, it's fine that they're separate. I would like it, because as Greg alluded to, they don't really get along. I'd love it if they did a cross promotion where they're like, your team versus our team. Let's, you know, mutual ground. And they play in like a fucking playground where there's like children in the background and stuff like that. But it's like street basketball. I'd love stuff like that. But also, I'm excited for the individual leagues. Like, for as far as I'm concerned, GSL is still the individual league. Yet when Pro League comes out, individual league, that is, OSL, as Greg had said, I want to see where that stacks up, because best of one in a team league format is very different from best of three 16-man, you know, bracket type tournament, which is what we have with GSL. So.
Yeah, both organizations have different focuses. Like, Pro League was always the biggest thing with Kessel because they had the big corporate sponsors, and the easiest way to, like, get more bang for your buck with that
when you sponsor a team is for the team to win something, not to say EG Idra won something, to say EG won something. So Pro League was always the focus there, but like Jeff said, with GOM and GSL and whatnot, GSDL was always more of a side, like a special event almost. It would run very quickly. It didn't get nearly as much focus or hype as GSL and particularly the GSL finals. So you get kind of like the big, important individual league coming out of GOM, but you also get the big super hyped team league coming out of the KESPA guys. So I think it's a pretty decent balance. I think everything can stay as is.
All right, fair enough. Just sort of hearing you guys talk, I thought, you know, maybe it'd be cool if they did, like, you know, top four KESPA teams, top four GSTL teams sort of had a little mini tournament or something, just because we don't really get to see them in that sort of team format against each other. I mean, as Jeff said, it is really different best of ones to you know, individual leagues.
Yeah. That would be
awesome.
That would
be a lot of fun. I can't imagine them doing it, but that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That would
be.
All right. Goatless, thank you very much for your call,
all
man.
Right.
Appreciate
thank you very
it.
Much,
as always. All right. Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's going to be the last call for the night. Time to wrap up. As always, our final thoughts and words from our co-hosts, and we'll go ahead and start with the Muslim.
Hello.
Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you to all the sports and such. I really appreciate it all the time. I'd like to say thanks to EG and its sponsors, Raidpool, Monster, Kingston, Razer, Intel, Inwin. You've all been fantastic. Thank you for supporting me. Friends, family, thank you. And where you can find me, Twitter, at The Muslim. My Facebook page is The Muslim UK. And my stream is The Muslim, www.twitch.tv/The Muslim. So check me out on any of those. I'll keep you guys all up to date. And look forward to 2013 with me. I think it's going to be a fantastic year.
Now that this is inside the EG, we need to have something like where we take all of our sponsors, not just the main ones, and like split them up, and then everyone says six, so then everyone gets low, because
now
I don't really have much to say. Follow me on Twitter at Idrajit, IDRAJIT. Watch my stream at twitch.tv/EG_Idra. Thank you all for watching, and those of you who had good questions when you called me.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, just a big shout out to everybody for tuning in. Thank you so much. I will be casting at MLG. I'm really excited about it. And if you're at that event, hopefully we'll be able to have some time to say hi. So please do come out. And outside of that, I'll be streaming as per usual. You can follow me on Twitter at EG and Control. And just thank you all for tuning in.
Just like to say thank you for everyone who tuned in tonight. Great questions, both to the email as well as, for the most part, we had some decent questions. So thanks to those that called in. We'll have Live on 3 tomorrow night. That's Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And